from runasradio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 114 with guest Brian Greger, recorded Thursday, April 28th, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and with me as always my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey, Richard. How are you today?
I'm well, sir. Things are going well. I moved into my new house, so I'm pretty excited about that, and hooking up lots and lots of equipment.
Yeah, you said something about, you mentioned something in an email or something there about some kind of, there's a Microsoft phone system. No, I saw it on your Facebook. That's where I saw it.
That's right. I got Microsoft Response Point, and I've been playing around with that. It's actually a small business phone system, but it's, you know, I've got my office in the house as well as the house upstairs. So
sure,
two things work together really well. Lots of cool features and for quite a reasonable price. So far, so good. It's all voice over IP, so it's just Cat6 everywhere in the house. And we've been trying out various like auto attendant modes, being able to forward by voice. It's kind of spooky because the default configuration, when somebody calls in on the main line, it says, mm-hmm. Who would you like to speak to? And you just say the name of the person.
Say Richard.
Yeah. And it forwards to the phone. Well, I programmed a phone just by typing in the word kitchen. I call the phone kitchen. And when I said kitchen, it knew which phone I was talking about and rang it.
That's pretty cool. So that's like a hardware and software combination kind of purchase, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an appliance box, and I got this. There's about three or four vendors for this thing. I got the Syspine one, which has four POTS lines in. Of course, it has VoIP lines if you want to use it. It'll take any number of handsets, and they're all just over the network. And quite reasonable. You can add up to 8 lines to it if you really want to. And there are a few other variations on it. And all the phones are cross-compatible. It's an impressive product. I'm really knocked out and really reasonable. I think it was $2,000 for the basic kit with 6 handsets.
Wow. That is reasonable. Yeah. Very cool. So yeah. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, let me introduce our guest and we'll figure this out. Our guest today is Brian Greger, and he's had 15 years at Microsoft working for support on everything from MS-DOS 5, Win 3.1 and 3.1.1, Windows 95, NT 3.5 and 4.0, 2000 and 2003, TCP/IP services, IS4 and above, Site Server, we won't talk about that, and BizTalk Server since the very beginning. He started working with BizTalk Server in 1999 when its first version 2000 was in beta, and he's worked frontline support answering phone calls and providing escalation support where they debug code and isolate and identify potential bugs. His current role has him working in Premier Field Engineering, designated to support a couple specific customers for BizTalk Server. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
Thank you, Richard and Greg. I appreciate you having me on your show.
I have talked about BizTalk on .NET Rocks, which is very much the developer side of the conversation. But the IT side, I think it's more of an IT product than a dev product anyway. I remember it as the EDI bridge back in 2000.
Right, right. There was actually definitely a very big EDI component when we started the product in 2000. And I don't think your connection there is completely inaccurate. It is very much a more of an admin architecture IT product than it seems to be dev. Now, obviously, there are a lot of dev components, and people can make it as configurable as they want to by plugging in a lot of their own custom code.
The whole idea of taking disparate applications that have different databases and data sets and different ways of communicating and sort of being able to glue that all together really requires you to have that customizability. Is that a word? The ability to be able to talk to all different types of systems, right?
Right, absolutely. Obviously, we try to include as many different components as we can out of the box, but you're always going to have that one special system that we don't know too much about. So you're more than welcome to write your own component to communicate with it.
Isn't this stuff that Distributed Transaction Coordinator could be doing? It's just coordination between multiple services, right?
Well, we actually use the Distributed Transaction Coordinator under the covers quite extensively within the BizTalk product. It doesn't necessarily know how to communicate with the different services, but it does coordinate all the transactions that go on between all the different systems.
Okay.
And isn't the workflow pretty important as well? I mean, the ability to not just to be able to connect different systems together, but also to be able to manage and sort of manipulate that data?
Right. So the workflow piece is a very important part of the product itself, but it's not absolutely necessary. One of the main features of the product is simply message transformation and transportation, I guess is one word you could use, where we can just take data from one system, convert it into some other type of format, pass it over to another system, and you don't actually have to go through any kind of a workflow in that scenario. But if your system does need some type of a workflow, then obviously you can create an orchestration that's going to honor that process and make sure that the data passes through in a predictable manner.
All right. So orchestration is not an essential part, but this is mainly about, I mean, this sounds like a programmer's problem, connecting all these things together. How do you make it an IT solution? What is the interface like that we can do all this kind of coordination?
So what we've done is within the product, we've provided this framework so that your developer can easily create these components to connect the different systems. And from an IT perspective, all you really have to do is go into the admin. You're creating these connection points, what we call receive locations and send ports. And within those receive locations and send ports, you point it to the specific component that the developer has created for you. In this case, I'm talking about pipeline components, which would actually be for the data transformation. But the other components that are going to connect to these other systems are going to be the adapters. And those adapters are what knows how to actually connect to the other systems for you. Making it a lot easier now with the latest versions, we've completely integrated WCF, Windows Communication Foundation, so that all of the adapters you create can now be based on WCF adapters to make it a lot more easily integratable.
Yeah, that's really a great feature for devs, although WCF provides awesome transport to stuff like the variations on web services, right?
Right. But the cool thing about it is that it can actually be hosted in anything. I mean, so you can write your own application that's not necessarily a web service that's still hosting a WCF adapter. It has all the same type of communication type patterns, but it's not necessarily on a web service.
Right. I guess the big thing here is trying to get through to all the different methods this thing can communicate with. I mean, EDI was there at the beginning, but is it just not that important anymore?
No, it's still very important. And it's the EDI piece of it really isn't about the different systems you're talking to as far as a transport adapter. It's actually about what we do with the data once we get it. So it has to validate that the data matches the specific schemas that we're dealing with, make sure the format's right, make sure the data types are right, and it keeps up with the different transactions that you have coming in and going out of the system. But the EDI data can actually be obtained from any number of sources. You could just be picking up files off the drive. You
right.
could be picking them up from an FTP server, you know, wherever your data might exist.
Yeah, it does feel to me like EDI sort of got shunted aside to some degree when the internet came into play and all of this became a lot simpler. Of course, I still think about EDI in the old way with synchronous modems and private networks, and it was $100,000 a month to be a part of it, that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And honestly, for a small bit of time there, we did kind of put EDI on a back burner. But with the latest versions, we've reintegrated it into the product so that it is a I don't want to call it a primal focus of the product, but it is one of the very important features that people are using the product for.
Yeah, you delivered a more enhanced EDI package as far as the different number of schemas and sources that can actually be leveraged, right?
Right. And what we did with the current version of the product right now is BizTalk Server 2009, but in the previous version, BizTalk Server 2006 R2, we actually reintegrated all of the EDI components into the base product, so that they actually follow along with the framework. They're actually utilized simply by adding in a particular pipeline component. And previous versions had made that a lot more complex to actually integrate and utilize.
So let's take the developers out of it, sort of to simplify a question here. Let's say that I'm an IT person, you know, in an IT operations shop. I don't have developers at my disposal, but I run a Microsoft shop. So, you know, maybe I have SharePoint stuff and I have Exchange and I have all the typical, you know, Microsoft platform stuff. How can I leverage BizTalk Server to improve the way that information is used in my organization? What are some sort of classic examples there?
Okay, so one of the things that one customer that I had seen is actually using the product for is a help desk type application, a customer response type scenario where one of their internal users would go to a website to enter in a help ticket. You know, for instance, my phone's not working anymore. Sure. They would submit this to the website. It would actually pass the data into the BizTalk server using either a SOAP or an HTTP adapter. BizTalk would have some business process logic that it would go through to take that information and then pass it off to the right personnel. It would assign the tasks to different teams to actually investigate the problem, or it, depending on if it was ambiguous or not, maybe it would pass it and to someone who actually had to make the decision, and then they would do the manual assignment on the ticket. But it was gotcha. Basically a response ticket tracking and reporting system. And then what they could do is actually they had a reporting front end that they could go to and query all the data that they had tracked within BizTalk to actually get statistics on how many response tickets they had, what kind of response times they had, that kind of thing. So that's just one example. But I've seen everything from retail scenarios to internal help desk to parts manufacturing, distribution, warehousing, medical claim insurance forms, you know, just the entire gamut of whatever you can think of, people are actually using the product for.
It's interesting because I always think of the product as interoperability between disparate systems. But, you know, in Greg's scenario there, it was all Microsoft technology, but it's still this coordination piece is fairly unique to BizTalk inside of the Microsoft sphere.
We're starting to branch out and pass it around the product SKUs, but it was the original product that started this thing, yes.
Okay. Yeah, just, you know, still trying to justify, it's not an inexpensive product, right? I don't know if I really want to get into licensing here per se, but what's a typical commitment to someone getting into BizTalk?
So there's actually a pretty hefty commitment. So if it's not a product that you want to just put in and, you know, just have one small little application for it, you want to have a plan. You want to have an architectural design for where you're going with this. But for BizTalk itself, your minimum configuration is essentially going to be at least one BizTalk server, SQL server. You're going to have an Active Directory domain. So you're looking at multiple, you know, OSs, SQL Server backend, BizTalk server frontend. And then the hidden cost that a lot of people don't actually understand until they get into it is the manpower, the actual resources to understand the product and how to use it properly.
It does sound like it takes a fair bit of understanding to use well.
To use well, yes. You can actually, with very little experience, get a single server scenario running up. And by single server, I mean everything's running on one box. You got SQL, BizTalk, whatever. Now, obviously, that's not going to be a very high-performing system. But to actually get it running, you can get everything running on one box with very little experience and set up very simple scenarios. You know, pick up a file from one location, pass it to another, do a very simple, you know, orchestration to do the business process logic to give you an idea of how the system works and how to put it together. But to actually get into some very large scenarios, you're going to need dev resources. You're going to need SQL DBAs. You know, you're going to need architects if you're going on a very large scale to actually get everything set up right.
Well, I'm also thinking in terms of needing to look at the whole business process flow, because this sounds like you're really sitting in the center of an awful lot of business practices. Like, isn't this stuff that SAP might own a part of if you're talking about, you know, customer communications or even stuff like Salesforce?
Okay, so as far as SAP, I'm not familiar with that system itself, but we do offer adapters for connectivity to it.
Right.
But as far as sitting in the center of all these different processes, if you try to understand the entire thing end to end and you have a large, you know, architectural design, it can be a lot to actually take in. But one of the key things about the product that I actually like and have liked from the beginning is that you can actually break down each individual piece into its own little component parts. So, for instance, the scenario I gave you as far as a file pickup, process through business process logic, and then drop it out somewhere else, those are three very distinct processes within the application. Everything works on what's known as the publish-subscribe model. So anything that passes the messages into the system are publishing messages into a database. Anything that's going to pick those messages up and process them is subscribing to those based on context properties that are published with the message. So you could actually just be an owner on the publishing piece. We've got particular messages. We need to get them into the message box. How we get them there doesn't really matter. And then if I'm on the other side of it where I'm doing the business processing, you know, I don't care where the messages come from, who they come from, but these are the properties I'm interested in. And so I care about getting the messages into the orchestration, doing what I need to do properly, and then getting them back out.
Right.
So it's something that you can break down into individual parts, rather than having to sit there and try to understand the entire piece.
Yeah. And I guess the big orchestrations only come when you have big workflows for the business.
Right. Absolutely. And the workflows, they can vary greatly as far as what kind of processing has to happen and whether you want one very big workflow or whether you want to break that up into individual component workflows. So you could have, you know, just like writing code, you could create an orchestration that only does like one particular method call.
Right.
As a, you know, comparison type thing.
One of my big concerns with technology like this in general, and this, I'm speaking very broad strokes, I don't want to pick on BizTalk per se, but when you have a generalist product like that, don't you have performance problems when it's you know, all things to all people kind of thing?
So that's actually a very good point, and that's one of the things that we definitely need to come around to when we're talking about it as an IT product. Most of our customers, they get the product, they put it in place, they get their applications running, life is good.
Right.
Well, business picks up, then you know, you're getting more and more volume that you didn't necessarily expect right away, and the transactions start slowing down or just come to a screeching halt. Volume testing and load testing are just extremely crucial in this product. And we've published a good bit of performance guidance and optimization white papers that talk about testing methodology for this product specifically, because it is a little bit different because you do have so many different moving pieces to it.
Yeah. And, you know, most of the time when you're dealing with complex coordination like that, just getting it working is enough. But right. Actually tuning it, like coming up with several different ways or the, you know, most performant way to do something, that seems very interesting. Is it usually when you really want to squeeze for performance that you go to developers on that? Or is it there are better, you know, particular methods that are more performant?
Actually, what we found is that you start out with your IT staff, your admins, who tend to be a little better on the performance side from an architectural perspective. Which is one of the reasons we point out these performance tuning and optimization white papers to the admin staff, say, make sure you read these. Because what they will do is start at a high level, and they'll gather all the performance metrics and then start pinpointing, okay, this area looks like it needs some tuning. This orchestration seems to be taking really long. Let's go talk to the developers, find out what's happening inside that orchestration. But we tend to start with the admins.
Yeah, but in the end, you have to have a business need here, right? I guess I'm wondering what the entry motivation is. Like, what is the thing that makes me think, I think I need BizTalk?
I think the initial point when we first envisioned the product and started actually creating it was simply what we started off the conversation with, the system integration.
Right.
You know, you've got a company that has 5, 6, 10 different systems internally, and then all of a sudden, hey, I need to make these all work together. I can write, you know, 10 or 20 different components that are going to understand each individual piece, or I can put this hub in the middle that says, all right, I know how to talk to each one of you, so pass your messages through me and we're okay. I think that's the initial thing.
Right.
Now, obviously there are branch reasons, like you'd mentioned EDI earlier. You know, one of the offshoots of that is HIPAA, our Health Privacy Act.
Yes.
We right. do completely support the HIPAA standards and all the privacy involved in that. So if we have customers who do medical insurance claims or have to follow HIPAA standards, then they can implement applications across BizTalk using those HIPAA schemas.
Well, and I've done some work on the healthcare side dealing with HL7, which seems to be the standard. It is not standardized.
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully, I haven't actually had to work with the HL7 piece of it yet, but we have a couple within that that are what we consider our experts for that.
Yeah, they're the guys with all their hair torn out.
And there are actually BizTalk accelerators, as I recall, for HIPAA and HL7, as well as a few other common standards and industries. I think it's the SWIFT banking standard, for example. I believe there's an accelerator for that, right?
Right, absolutely. The SWIFT and HL7 are still add-on accelerators you can get, but the HIPAA stuff is all built in now.
Interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it, and these are, again, I'm trying to still feel around for the thing that makes an IT guy really go, oh, I think I want to buy this. Because often I would think that if you have a strong dev team working in your organization, they can roll their own of a lot of this stuff themselves.
Right, right, absolutely. And I have had several conversations about that with customers. I did have one in particular who, they were a very strong dev shop, just like you described. And every feature that they were interested in the product, they're like, well, we can write that. You know, I'm sure you can, you know, but we've already written it. So if, unless there's some reason for you to, you know, reinvent the wheel, you know, maybe there's a specific feature you need that's not in the product. You have to sit down and consider what's the man hours going to take to actually write these components, to maintain them, to test them.
Especially once you start combining multiple, you know, different systems that you're communicating through something like a BizTalk. If I had systems A, B, C, and D, and I'm initially interested in getting A to and D to communicate with each other and share information, the ability to add B and C later on without having to reinvent the wheel each time, that's where the real value can be seen.
Right, because those add-on features, you know, once you get it in place for A and D, adding B and C really is as simple as just creating artifacts in the admin, which are just, you know, right-click, walk through a wizard. You won't get that, you know, by rolling your own. So,
I'm curious about the interface and the ability to connect with SharePoint. I know that there's an adapter for SharePoint. What does that allow people to do? Because I think a lot of our listeners, you know, have at least some form of Windows SharePoint services running on their network.
Right. So the SharePoint adapter will actually allow you to post documents up to lists and to pull documents down from SharePoint lists. So if you need to manipulate those in any way, you can also integrate those with your workflows in SharePoint so that when I post a document up, it'll launch the workflow, go do whatever we need to do. Or if you pull one down, you can process it through a workflow within BizTalk if there's some kind of a approval process, or that's just the process that always happens to hit my head whenever I'm talking about these. But any kind of process or workflow that has to be done on those documents. But essentially, it's reading and writing documents to lists.
Okay.
So, yeah, now we're looking at sort of large-scale implementation of this. So how far do people go? Maybe give us a story of your customers that you're working with. I know you maybe can't name names, but sort of implementations we're talking about.
Without naming names, one of our largest and long-term customers is a auto manufacturer who actually uses the product for manufacturing and warehousing on parts and distribution. So the actual assembly line is run by the inventory that's shipped through their BizTalk system. So to me, that's pretty neat. When they call and say, hey, something's broken, the assembly line stopped.
Yeah, well, there is an interesting part of this whole thing is, you know, that now you're talking about software that operates assembly lines. You wouldn't want an auto manufacturer to have financial problems.
No, we would never want that.
Let's hope the auto manufacturer can afford to pay their bill next month, I think is what we're saying.
That brings up another key feature in this, right? We, within the software industry, we tend to have these business critical applications.
Right.
And BizTalk, due to the inherent architecture of it, is designed to be highly available and fault tolerant. All of the data exists within SQL Server databases. So as long as your SQL Server is clustered, that data should always be available and fault tolerant.
So you guys, BizTalk didn't have to reinvent high availability. It uses the high availability that's already there. But is there redundancy for the orchestration engines and stuff?
Right. So that's the piece that we actually did kind of create within the product. So, you know, people tend to think of load balancing and clustering, and then everything's great. Load balancing doesn't have to be added on to BizTalk because it's kind of built into the way the engine works. So if you have two servers that are both doing the same type processing and one of them goes down, the other one can still pick up the data that the first one was processing. Because what they do is they tag the data in the database with, you know, some identifying mark, and there's a heartbeat that detects when that particular server is still up or not up. So if it doesn't respond within a certain period of time, it'll clean out the IDs so that some other server can pick it up and continue processing that data. So it's kind of a failover mechanism within the host instances or the processes themselves, that if one fails, the others can pick up for it.
That's good. I mean, that's the sort of thing we're looking for once we get into sort of mission-critical workflows and those sorts of things. What do the failure modes look like? I'm trying to imagine what can you do in an orchestration engine if some particular server in a set of coordinated processes has gone away.
Right. So are you referring to external services or something internal?
Well, yeah, the line's pretty blurry there. But
So it's kind of different depending on where the failure occurs. But let's say we're talking about a completely internal failure. In that very simple scenario that we talked about earlier, where you pick up a file, you run an orchestration, and you drop a file.
Right.
Depending on what kind of failure we're talking about, if we're talking about the actual orchestration engine failing, then that particular server won't be able to process orchestrations anymore. But as long as you have multiple servers running that process, you will only notice the first failure, and then everything else should be processing fine.
Right.
If, for instance, your entire orchestration level goes down, then your receiving piece will still continue to work. It'll pick up messages, drop them into the database, and wait for somebody to pick them up and process them. So that, as you can imagine, might actually cause an issue further down the road. It's kind of a floodgate scenario. Once you do get the orchestrations running, then all of a sudden there's these tens of thousands or millions of messages to be processed.
But it's still better. So, I mean, I like the queuing model because mm-hmm. you're able to deal with the fact that, hey, if this server's down, at least the work is queuing up. You're not stopping other people from pushing stuff to you.
Right. Your partners don't necessarily notice that anything's going wrong right away.
Right. They get used to the fact that probably it's a sub-second transaction process, and now it's somewhat longer than that.
Right. But that also keys on to the fact that monitoring of this system is extremely crucial. So we do have a management pack for System Center.
Yeah.
And the previous versions management packs for MOM that will allow you to help monitor not only event log messages, but you can actually monitor the perf counters that we have built into the product to detect if there are bottlenecks, if certain numbers are growing that shouldn't be growing, things like that, so that you can then notify and go take a look at the system to find out what's going on.
Is there a set of, do you use performance analysis of logs with BizTalk?
We love PAL. performance analysis of logs is like a boon to the performance neophytes like myself. I've never had to focus on performance very much, but PAL has actually helped me start coming around a little better to that. And as a matter of fact, we actually utilize PAL quite extensively in our health check offering. When we go on site and actually determine the health on a customer's environment, we'll use PAL to analyze the perf data at a high level to give us, cool. You know, pointers and indicators of things that the customer needs to be paying a little closer attention to.
Yeah, they're magic numbers that PAL's got that just sort of gives you that sense of this is a reasonable set of figures.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, just like anything else, when you're looking at that kind of information, it's going to be dependent on the system, right? I mean, you could have a particular environment that this number is perfectly fine for, but in a different environment, this is something that needs to be tweaked to fix.
Right.
So you have to know the system in order to know what the numbers are good or bad.
Yeah, the old it depends answer.
Absolutely. We've grown to love that phrase too.
So how can you scale a BizTalk infrastructure if you're bringing in millions of messages? Because it's just queue, do you just have multiple servers each picking up work off the queue?
So here it depends on where you're actually finding your bottleneck is. You might need to scale by adding databases.
Right.
So the queuing mechanism is actually one database called the message box database. You can scale out by having multiple message box databases, and they will actually do a kind of a round robin type fashion as far as which database gets the next message and publishes. You can scale out by having multiple SQL servers hosting some databases on one server instance, some databases on another server instance. We have two very high volume databases. One is the tracking database and one's the message box database. And it's primarily recommended to separate those two on different instances. You can also scale out by just adding BizTalk servers and creating the processes on those hosts, which will automatically start picking up and processing the data along with the other servers that are in that particular group.
All right. So in the end, it's just buy more.
Potentially, yeah.
But it's not always just buy more BizTalk, but maybe buy more SQL Server and so on.
Right, right. And one other thing you can do actually without buying more, let's say, for instance, you're process bound. You're just getting, let's say I've got a two-server farm or group, I should call it, and the particular process that I'm running is actually becoming bound within itself because there's so much volume coming through. One thing you can do is actually create multiple processes on each BizTalk server and separate out the different processing functions. So I'm receiving in one particular process, doing orchestrations in another process, and sending in a different process. As long as the server itself isn't bound, you can add more processes to the server to help share the load.
That's cool. Yeah, and I'm also thinking the sort of virtualization model of BizTalk. It's very interesting in a utilization form. You know, we talked a lot about this back in the original 32-way processor machines, the big Unisys boxes and those sorts of things where, you know, at night when we were going to ream through lots and lots of data, we'd shift more processors over to that kind of engine and then during the day shift them back to sort of daytime tasks. But that model seems to have gone away in favor of spinning up more VMs.
Right. And I think we are starting to actually get into the virtualization model a little bit. We've recently published a white paper on Hyper-V with BizTalk, and it seems to be a cost savings that a lot of customers can realize. You know, one of the things that I found with a couple of customers is they don't like dedicating individual hardware to these because their applications are not so intensive that they need all that hardware.
Right.
So if they take it and throw it on a VM somewhere, they're actually better able to utilize that hardware.
Well, and especially at the beginning of a new utilization like this. I mean, this is, I think, one of the barriers to BizTalk is how much dedicated hardware do we need just to get started?
Right.
And that's a very difficult question to answer.
Yeah, it totally depends. But it's nice to spin it up on a VM first, you know, no hardware commitment, just a bit of space on a machine that isn't that busy. And then as you see that VM get busier, you can start get a sense of the utilization and what kind of gear I want to assign to it.
Right. And that goes back to the performance thing we were talking about earlier, as far as, you know, it's a research investment when you go to a product like this, because you need to do, you know, all your due diligence to make sure that you're going to be able to handle what it is you think you're going to be processing.
Right. Well, it strikes me this is one of those technologies that will get a little viral, that once you've got a group of guys who know how to use it, they're going to keep bumping into business cases where that might be a good solution. And being able to have a low barrier to entry would really make it compelling.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It'd be an easy way to get your foot in and find out if it's something that you want to proceed with.
Right. That's, you know, we're trying to pull in a service that's external, or I get back to your auto company model, where I know those sort of third-party suppliers, being able to sell to an automaker was an incredibly expensive proposition. You had to comply with their labeling requirements and shipping requirements and their electronic data interchange requirements. You know, it represented a huge commitment to try to even sell to that company. And this is the sort of infrastructure that could lower that bar dramatically.
Right. Absolutely. And they actually started with us back in the very first version. So BizTalk 2000 back in 1999. And they've just, you know, migrated their application up to the next versions, you know, as they were able to rework things. And so far they've been very pleased with everything that's going on with it.
And for them, it's primarily supply channel. This is all of the different vendors that supply all the different parts, being able to feed data to them efficiently.
Right. It's parts. They also have it set up for the dealerships in their parts supply.
Oh, okay.
So if somebody goes to a dealership and says, "I need part X," you know, they can actually process that part request order through the same system.
And rip it all the way back up to the guy who actually makes it.
Right.
Interesting stuff for different businesses. I mean, this is the sort of thing we would craft, the developer would craft themselves. So to get a bunch of that plumbing off the table and have it run by an infrastructure like this and taken care of by IT pros, it seems very compelling.
Yep, absolutely.
Hey, Brian, we're coming down to the last few minutes of the show. Any shout outs, things we may have missed, things that the folks that are interested in BizTalk should be looking at?
Well, if you're going to be a BizTalk admin, I'd definitely recommend a couple of the links. One of them is going to be Message Box Viewer, which unfortunately I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry.
No worries. We can fix that. Shrixer.com/16UY. Is that the one?
Yep. And the Message Box Viewer was a tool written by one of our escalation engineers who started out with strictly just an idea of querying the message box itself for any problems in data, but it has slowly turned into an all-encompassing, this is a good idea of how your system's working. So any BizTalk admin needs to run that on a, you know, couple of month basis to see how things are changing and to see how things are working in their environment.
Right. And you can see Message Box Viewer at shrinkster.com/16U as in uniform, Y as in Yankee.
And we've already mentioned PAL, but that's always worth mentioning again.
Yep.
I think you've got the Shrinkster thing there too.
It's pal.coplex.com. Not hard to find.
Okay.
and everybody should run PAL. It'll make you feel better about yourself.
Absolutely. And that's not just a BizTalk thing.
And the guy who wrote it deserves all the credit that he can get for it.
We love Clint.
Yeah, Clint's a great guy. He and I have worked together for several years. Other than that, the only other recommendations would be, you know, making sure and taking a look up at msdn.microsoft.com/BizTalk. And the white papers that we have up there, we've been really forcing documentation. And we've had a lot of coordination with some of our groups like BizTalk Rangers as far as doing the performance optimization and tuning and things like that.
Excellent. Brian Greger, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate the time.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.